What an outpouring of respect for this man.
You're former champion. You have a title match. You want to walk away with the title, but just tonight, just didn't have enough.
I have CEO, I think, has been on all of the review takeover cast that we've done here, and CEO absent, somebody stepping up here. Misery Williams. Misery, welcome to the podcast, man. How did you enjoy tonight's NXT overall?
Misery Williams in the house, my first NXT review show, and what a night to do it on, the night before WrestleMania. NXT was cool. I mean, every time I watch a takeover show, it makes me want to watch the NXT shows weekly. I just can't ever bring myself to do it, though. But tonight was great. Great action all around.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny about NXT is that they do these takeover specials like just regularly enough to where you don't really even need to watch the television like weekly. I do, and I enjoy it, and obviously I cover it here on the network. But these takeovers more or less speak for themselves. This one, all of these matches, with the exception of maybe the women's match, didn't have an exceptional build. The tag division itself, through all three of these teams being, kind of great characters and great teams in and of themselves. So that more or less spoke for itself. It didn't really need a lot of booking. What were you looking forward to most, especially as somebody who doesn't watch it on a weekly basis?
I just was looking for the characters. You know, that's what I'm big on. I'm just looking to see who I'm going to like or dislike whenever they debut on the main roster. As far as match goes, of course, I'm a big Asuka fan. That's my baby, so I'm looking forward to anything she does. Throwing Ember Moon in the goddamn, my night's made. They could have just fought for 2.5 hours, and that'd have been good. Along with Shinsuke Nakamura's entrance. He just gets me every time.
Yeah, that and obviously Rude's entrance was pretty spectacular as well, as was Ember Moon's. I mean, we'll get into a little bit more of that as we get into the heart of the show, waiting for our third co-host here, I guess, tonight. Gerald Cooper's about to hop on hopefully soon. But you and I have a bit of a challenge ahead of us here, my friend. You laid down the challenge for the King Booker Championship. How you doing, man? Are you prepped? Are you ready? You think this is going to be a show off? And when are we ultimately unveiling?
As far as I'm concerned, I've already booked SummerSlam. I've got my notes written down. I've got all the pay-per-views lined up and listed, and how I'm gonna get from Mania to SummerSlam. So I'm good on my part. It's just whatever you've done, we'll just determine a later date soon. It's got to be before the next pay-per-view, but. After seeing Sanity tonight, I kind of want to incorporate them somehow into something. I just love those guys right now. But I'm going to stick with what I got. How are you doing with yours, Bello?
I'm several hours and several pages into my booking. I'd say I'm slightly more than halfway at this point to booking what could quite possibly be the greatest SummerSlam of all time. I'm confident as well. We'll see, I suppose. But yeah, no, I'm confident as well. And if nothing else, D-Will, I could say confidently that win or lose, first place, second place, no matter what the order, what we will book will indefinitely be better than what we will get.
110%. Just so I'm clear, you're doing the pay-per-view format that's listed, right? Because I think it's, what's the next pay-per-view? Payback, which I'll be attending. It'll be Payback, Backlash, Extreme Rules, Money in the Bank, Bad Blood, then Battleground, then SummerSlam. That's how I've got mine strained out. Is that what you're doing?
I've got a bit more of a general approach, I guess, on it, because the way CEO broke it down is that I'm just booking basically the entire roster on both shows, all three shows, really, all the way up to happening at SummerSlam. So I kind of have it broken into four parts of post-Mania, kind of the in-between sections, and then boom, like this is what's going on as we get into WrestleMania and all the stuff that led to it. So it's not broken down necessarily as far as cards for all those pay-per-views, but general ideas as to where the feuds are going.
Damn, you got NXT too?
No, I did 205.
No, spoiler alert, there's no cruiserweights on my show.
Well, mine, as a matter of fact, the cruiserweights, I'll give this little teaser, are highlight of my show, but that's I got a very interesting angle all worked around that, but I am the king of the cruiserweight, so I do have the slight advantage there.
I already don't like your card. I got 13 matches, which is a lot for a SummerSlam.
I should have a similar amount by the time we get there, including one spectacular cruiserweight match, but yeah, it's really just the one, and that's all. It's the only match that's really going to matter. But I think that match alone might win me this competition. I guess we'll see on who you know how the panel feels about it all. But I guess we should at least get into NXT here. I think we've stalled about as long as we can. Hopefully, Gerald will be able to hop on in a minute. But I mean, matches. I don't want to talk about any of the really important ones without Gerald. So let's start off with this opening match that we had here: the eight-man match, mixed tag. We had Sanity on one side, Ty Dillinger on the other side, with Roderick Strong, Ruby Riott, and Cassius Ohno, who had to come in place of No Way Jose earlier in the day at WrestleMania Access. A good little angle. Sucks for No Way Jose missing TakeOver. What did you think about that before the match even started?
It's a nice thing. It makes me wonder if he's really injured. I wonder if this was the plan all along, which, you know, it probably was. I'm sure they value Cassius more than they do No Way Jose. I know I sure do, and I don't know who Cassius is. I hate No Way Jose. I hope he never debuts on the main roster. But correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he lose a Loser Leaves NXT match? Or was that somebody else? Am I confusing him with somebody else, Cassius?
He was involved in that match. He was involved in that match. Won the match, though. He won the Loser Leaves NXT match. And Elias Samson is now banished from NXT.
Oh, Elias, okay.
Yeah, and, you know, Cassius Ohno, though, for much as they like to give him sort of a high profile, and obviously the fans really like him, like the sort of smarky fans that watch NXT all the time are, you know, well aware of the Chris Hero character on the indies, and we're brief, you know, he's generally over with that crowd. So they push him into these big spots. He's had a title match. He's a surprise entrant in this match, and this, that, and the other thing, but you know, like I'm somewhat more entertained by him now than I've been with some of his work on the indies. I know you're not entirely familiar with all that stuff, but yeah, it's, I don't know. It's like they're making him a big deal, but at the same time, he's losing at every turn. How do you, you know, how do you feel about Ohno and the build that they've been having? Where do you see him going in NXT based on, you know, your knowledge of him?
Really, my knowledge stems from tonight and just, you know, I hear he was a big thing on Independence, but I feel like he's going to be on the NXT roster for another year and a half. I don't think he's quite ready to be on the main roster anytime soon. I feel like there are a lot of guys ahead of him that deserve a shot at the NXT title. So that's just my opinion. That's just what I got of the 20 minutes I saw to him today.
It's funny you should say that, because that he's not ready for the main roster. I mean, I happen to think that he would be, but I'm not like I'm not a huge proponent for him. There's a million other guys I'd like to see on the main roster, but he actually was, when he was in NXT the first time around, slotted to not only be on the main roster, but he was almost going to be part of the Shield before the Shield ultimately became what it was. But he was in one of the iterations that could have happened backstage. He was basically going to be the Roman Reigns of the Shield. And,
His first runaround with NXT.
No, he was with them in the past, and you know, for whatever reason, the internet rumor anyway was that, you know, he wasn't keeping in good shape, and basically, you know, that they weren't happy with his progress as far as cardio and slimming down, and they ultimately got rid of him. Now that's all been speculation. I don't know that that's actually been confirmed anywhere. But now that they've brought him back, because he's sort of made a bigger name for himself on the indies, they've brought him into the fold in NXT, and I guess they're going to give him another shot.
If any part of that is true, what an idiot. Fucking lose weight, hit the gym. You're a professional freaking wrestler.
I think he just happens to have a body type that's just not going to be conducive to abs. Like, Braun Strowman has abs, but Braun Strowman's like a freak of nature, and they don't even showcase them anyway, which is frustrating. But it looks like Coop has joined us. Gerald, Ladies and gentlemen, Gerald Cooper, host of the Hour of Honor here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network. Gerald is one of our longest tenured listeners and has now transformed into full-blown co-host. So welcome aboard officially. I don't know if I've gotten to say that on the network. How did you enjoy tonight's NXT, since me and D-Will are in the process of talking about it overall?
Loved it, man. Just another great show. Takeover just never under-delivers, you know. Build notwithstanding, this was another great one.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was saying to D-Will, is that, like, he doesn't watch NXT on a weekly basis. I'm not sure if you do. He was saying, I want to watch it because these takeovers are great. But at the end of the day, I was saying to him, you really don't need to. The builds are kind of inconsequential. You're going to get a great two and a half hours of wrestling no matter what at a takeover.
Yeah, I actually commented on that on, I can't think of what show it was that I did. But I just talked about the weekend and how takeover just never fails to deliver. I haven't watched in maybe a month now, but I likened it to the Marvel movies. If you liked all of the Avengers movies, if you like Captain America, you know, outside of like personal taste, sorry, you didn't like Thor, you didn't like Ant-Man, but overall you can trust Marvel to give you something great every time you go to the movies. And I think that applies to Takeover. I've maybe those Balor Joe matches, but other than that, I can't find a takeover that isn't at the most, you know, or at the least rather an A-.
Yeah, takeover's pretty much always a hit. But D Will here, we had like I said, obviously Cassius Ohno running in here to fill in for No Way Jose, but Sanity ultimately goes over. I feel like literally everyone in this match looked better coming out of this match. Dillinger obviously takes the pin. He's a fan favorite. He's not losing anything from any of this. What did you think about the match overall? And what did you think about the debuting Ruby Riott?
Ruby Riott looks like a fucking pelican or something. There's just something off about her face that I just don't like. but I'm looking forward to the Ruby Riott Paige match, because they're two dark chicks that I'm sure I'm being entertained with their little matchup. Love Sanity's entrance. I love their character. I love their intensity. And for the first time ever, and I never thought I'd say this, I am a fan of Eric Young. I've caught his TNA stuff, and I was never, ever a fan of him. He was always too goofy, too silly, and I never took him seriously. I'm taking him seriously now. And Ty Dillinger, he's just a star in the making. Why is he still in NXT? Ultimately, those are my thoughts. I don't really have any opinion on Cassius Ohno or... I don't even know who their other partner was.
I dug the match quite a bit. It's interesting that you talk about their Sanity's intro. It never really comes over in full sail for me for some reason. It's almost like you can't even see them coming to the ring, and there's something lacking in that smaller environment. But the first thing I noticed was in a larger arena, you can just, it actually has the space to be what it needs to be with the background and the spotlights and everything. I thought that was cool. Definitely dug the and it was a small thing, the eye makeup, and I was like, man, it's they're two steps off of being, you know, the characters out of Mad Max Fury Road, which fits into that post-apocalyptic thing that they got going on. What else? Ruby Riott was cool. What's her name, Bella? Heidi Lovelace on the indies?
Yeah, that was her name, and you know, admittedly, I'm not particularly familiar with her other than, you know, she's got a bit of a reputation of being a good worker and a decent character, but she's coming off pretty good. What did you think about her going up to Nikki Cross and pretty much smacking her in the face?
I agree. It was a nice little debut, and it she's got that, you know, down to the tattoo. She's got that CM Punk thing just in a female form, just the overall aesthetic going on, which I definitely appreciate. We're lucky enough to live in a time where it doesn't have to be one look that gets over, and that could be something that catches on, you know. In my opinion anyway, I think somebody said the women all had a similar style or a similar aesthetic, and that's the case on Raw. There's a broad feel. But the women overall, I mean, SmackDown, the women overall feel very different from each other. And this is just another, to me, another drop in the bucket. I think that's important that, you know, even with the guys, that you do have the body guys, you got the fat guys, you got the average looking guys. I heard you talking about Hero when I came here, sorry, Ono, when I came on. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I didn't get everything, but it's kind of, does it really matter that he's pear-shaped or whatever it is? Because I don't know too many skinny dudes who can do that handstand flip to the floor that he did off the apron, you know? And, right. And the other part is his gear is ridiculous. I mean, like that, like, what was that? The Sacramento Kings?
Yes.
Was that a play on that today? So I don't, the, and, you know, taking it back to Ruby, I feel like there's room for, different looks, unique looks and everything. So she was a nice, you know, nice little bit of fresh air there.
She's too different though. In my opinion, she's just way out there. The shaved head. She kind of reminds me of that one chick who was in the Straight Edge Society. What was her name?
Oh my God. Sarah, I loved her. Oh my God. I loved her. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
But just, I don't know. I'm gonna call her emo. That's my nickname for her.
That's what my son is. He's like, why are these? Because he likes WWE. It's like, why are these NXT people look so emo and serious? Like, could be because they are, son. That could be the reason.
That seems to be a way that they're going. I mean, I do like the idea of them looking different. I was sort of intrigued by the idea of her coming right in and going after Cross. You figured there would be almost like a build to something like that, where these two, you know, crazy characters, one being a heel, one being a face, would meet up, similar to what we got with the women. And I feel like this is as good a transition as any. So let's move into Asuka and Ember Moon. I feel like this would have been the type of build that you could have gotten out of something like Nikki Cross and Heidi Lovelace, where these two were just built and separate so long, and then now they finally meet, and God damn, did it live up to the hype. This was a war. Gerald, I'll go to you first, man. What did you think about this? What did you think about the new title in particular?
Love the new titles. Well, Vince isn't listening, so I can say belts. Love the new belts. Great designs. I think it was you and Hayes talking about they needed to dump those belts because of the Paige controversy. Never considered it, but you're probably right. That's probably they needed to. But they were also in story building to a pivot or you know, this, and they've done this with takeovers where this takeover is a new start of a kind. So what better way to, again, add to the aesthetic or change the aesthetic a little bit, you know? I think I heard, I don't remember who it was. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about the ropes. And they need to freshen up the yellow and black. That may be true, but I think this is a good start. As far as this match goes, I really enjoyed it. I'm so nitpicky and specific in particular. I saw why I wasn't connecting with Ember Moon for the first time, but I'll go back to that. But as the match went on, it kind of, I guess she kind of got away from it. She always looks like she's waiting for the next move to me. There's a lot of ballet aspect to what she does, as opposed to fight, which is what Asuka does. And you see it waiting on the arm drags. You see it waiting on moves to make contact here and there. But again, as the match progressed, she more or less caught her groove, and it was excellent. It was some great, tremendous character work from both. Very hard hitting, like the kicks from Asuka, always ridiculous, and that's one of the things I dig about NXT and why a lot of what Ring of Honor, of course, bringing it back to my stuff, why a lot of this stuff is working for me, because it's not so sports entertainment, and these things they feel like fights, and they feel less like predetermined exhibitions. And again, probably a quarter of the match in, it started to feel like a fight.
Yeah, I agree. D-Will, what did you think about this?
With all the hype surrounding this matchup, I heard people talk about how this may be the greatest women's match that we've ever seen. I felt like it was nowhere near that. Great match, don't get me wrong, but there was so much hype, I was expecting a whole lot out of these two. That being said, it's a 5-star match in my book because hard hitting. They were whooping right. each other's ass in this matchup. This felt like a grudge match. So I love that. And you don't get that too often between two women, and only these two women could have pulled it off like that. So, right decision to have Asuka win. I was worried that Ember Moon was going to win, but I think Asuka should just remain defeated. And whenever she does lose, it's going to be a Undertaker-esque. That's how long Asuka should stay undefeated, in my opinion.
Can I jump in real quick? Is this the finish and the lead up to the finish where Asuka pushes the referee into the ropes when Ember's on the top rope? You saw what I said in the chat. Do you think that there's going to be a bona fide line drawn where she is now a heel as a result of a cheap move? I've never seen her use a cheap move. I've seen her be dirty before, you know, but never cheap. So is this a move towards making her a full on heel?
You can argue that she was the heel coming into this matchup. But Asuka's Asuka. She's the Stone Cold of the women's division right now. She's just going to do her, and if you stand in her way, she doesn't care if the fans cheer her or not, she's going to whoop her ass. So Asuka's just looking out for her. She's going to retain no matter what. If she has to be conniving or sneaky, so be it. If she can beat you one-on-one, so be it. So that's just Asuka being Asuka. So no, I don't feel like there's a heel turn in her future, nor should there be. Not a full-fledged one.
Yeah, this is something me and CEO have discussed a lot on the podcasts over time, is that Asuka just seems to transcend the heel face dynamic to the point to where it's just like whatever fits their narrative. If they wanted to go from this right into her feuding with another heel, she could just as easily play the face if they could make that heel thing and conniving enough to somehow get the upper hand on her. But as far as this outcome, I mean, yeah, we get Asuka winning. She's still undefeated. Ember Moon by no means looks like a slouch in any of this. I mean, I think they built her really well, especially obviously not taking the clean loss. But what are the implications here? Gerald, I'll go to you first on this one. As far as who's or either coming up, is this continuing for a while? I like the idea of Asuka in particular being undefeated and just relinquishing this NXT title and seeing Ember Moon somewhere down the road on the main roster.
Well, I don't think there's anybody else. Well, there's now we have Ruby Riott, who they may, again, she's got a unique look and she's, you know, she kind of showed that she was pretty tough, so they could move her into those spots. But we got the Aussie girls, the Aussie Mean Girls, who are clearly next, and the company's clearly high on them. When they're not on the show, they're kind of dominating the pre-show. So they're going to be in the mix somewhere along the line. I mean, why can't Asuka go up and take the title with her? You know, why Kevin Owens essentially did it, you know, until he got beat by Balor. Like, why couldn't she wrestle in both places until, okay, now she ran through, let's say, SmackDown. She ran through the entire SmackDown women's division, and she just had to give the belt back because she couldn't hold them both.
Yeah, they've done that in the past with Paige. Paige had to give up the belt eventually.
She's already a monster. Like, just make her a bigger monster. I don't know how many, sorry to cut you off, Bella, but it's like how many just truly dominant, I mean, like beyond wins and losses, just truly dominant players do they have in the entire company? Two?
Yeah. I love the prop of Asuka has not been defeated since she signed in the WWE ever,
right,
coming up to the main roster as a tool. But D Will, what do you think? Asuka coming up? Is Ember Moon coming up? Are they swerving us on any of this? Interested to hear your thoughts on main roster implications here.
I don't think either of them are coming up. Not within the next month or so. I just don't see at this point in time on either roster. I don't see where either of them fit. I think it'd just be kind of random to have either of them debut, there's, it doesn't really seem like there's the right cause for it. And the thing with Asuka, if she were to hold two belts or bring the NXT title to the main roster, I mean, she still has to work. She would still have to work the NXT schedule and the main roster schedule. That's a hell of a lot. And plus, they work on the same day, so she can't be two places at once. So that's why if she does debut on the main roster before dropping the belt, she's going to have to vacate it, in my opinion. I don't think the NXT championship should be on the main roster. That's just me.
Well, they could just as easily. I mean, the way that they tape NXT, like, they'll probably have the next month or two of NXT taped by some point at the end of the week. Like, they'll go into a fresh set of tapings for NXT right now, and they'll tape the next, like, 3 months worth of NXT. So they, big lengthy tapings for, you know, the, and they only have to do the hour show, but they'll do like maybe three or four 8 hour tapings in a given day to try to get a bunch in, or 4 or 5 hour tapings maybe, but they could do almost 3 months of TV in a week basically. Yeah.
Oh, I'm against that.
That's the way they've been doing it for a long time. That's why the spoilers get out so much. There's so much stuff out there already.
I mean, I guess it makes sense because, you know, they're doing other shit like touring and whatnot, but I don't know. I don't know. Because that 3 months, my God, 2 weeks maybe, but 3 whole months, 2 whole months, a month, I'm okay with, but that's pushing it. 3 months, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, sometimes it's like two, but three is on the high end of what they might try to do at any given time. But they got to basically cover from now to SummerSlam. So, I mean, it's not necessarily going to do it. They're not going to do it all in one shot, but they'll, you know, probably in two pieces. So whatever halfway to now in SummerSlam is most likely what they'll tape this week.
What's next up on the cards?
Well, before we move on, because I don't want this to get lost in the shuffle, Drew Galloway made an appearance. He took Edge and Beth Phoenix's seats, apparently. It looks like he's going to be showing up in NXT, which is an interesting choice. I mean, he's one of the few people you figure could have maybe gotten around NXT because of his history on the main roster and being a former chosen one. But D-Will, I'll go to you first on this one, because I think I've been going to Gerald first on all of these. What do you think about Drew Galloway making a comeback?
Well, first, I think it's hilarious how they rotate superstars in that one spot throughout the show. I just think that's hilarious. Like, yeah, we know they're not. Why even bother? We know they're not there to watch the whole show. Why even do that? But I was never really a fan of Drew McIntyre. He had an okay theme song, I guess, which people used to love, but I was never really a fan of that or his chosen one gimmick. I don't know. It's just, he was a bust before. He's going to be a bust now later. He's just not good enough. He's good, but he's just not good enough. He's an NXT level talent, and that's perhaps where he should end his career, in NXT.
Gerald, do you agree? Have you been following any of Galloway's activities on the indies? Because I have, and I'm tending to disagree with D-Will, but interested to hear what you have to say.
What I've been seeing are the promos. And I think the last in-ring thing I saw was, it was months and months ago with him in EC3 and in the Evolve ring. But I'm actually all for it. I think a guy who, again, what they like, they love the international flavor, a big guy, good looking guy who can talk. I don't see why not. And they need the talent. They need to rotate, or not rotate, but need to get new people, freshened up folks in. Before I go on, I was curious, do we know what soured them on him? Because I actually enjoyed him quite a bit when he was Drew McIntyre on his initial run.
The three man band. They didn't have anything to do with them. So was that?
That was later.
Oh, well, then I don't have an answer to your question.
No, but that's the thing. I was curious. Like, do we know what the, you know, he came in and was just pushed to the moon. Like, where was the, or what was the impetus to kind of drop him down the cart?
I think it's that he wasn't connecting with the crowd as fast as they wanted him to. That's what I think. Because you got to, Vince McMahon came out to the ring and said, this guy is going to be a future world champion. And right, he turned out to be a bust. So I just feel like he just wasn't garnering. He wasn't garnering the crowd reaction that he should have. And I don't know if that's entirely his fault or the writing staff's fault, but if they wanted to, they probably could have pushed him like they're pushing Roman Reigns and forced us to react to this guy. But maybe it is him. Sometimes you have it and sometimes you don't. I'm one of the people that thinks he just didn't have it, and that's why he never got to the level where other people think he should have been.
Yeah, I think one of his problems definitely was his accent. Much as they do like the foreign flavor, Vince also doesn't like super European guys, and he's sort of marble mouthed with that accent. It's hard to kind of understand what he's saying sometimes. I think he's definitely improved that in recent years, at least, and you can tell he's made it a point to do so, probably for that reason. And now that he's back, I don't think it's a coincidence that he's cutting better promos. And NXT is a good way for him to build. Like matches with him and Ono, or matches with him and Aleister Black, or something. I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, because he's an easy 6'7", right?
Yeah, he's one of the true big boys. Like, I mean, he's going to stand pretty close to, you know, to Cass, who if Cass is a shoot 7 feet tall, which I don't believe he is, the two of them are going to look like the same size, basically standing next to one another. And Galloway's. I think that's another thing he's improved on over time too, is he's a little bit bigger and yet still somehow more athletic and versatile in his in-ring work.
As big as he is, I think he needs to get bigger. He needs to bulk up. He needs to get the size of Kane when he was in his physical peak. He needs to get jacked, and he needs to inject something into his body.
Well, maybe he'll get that Jinder Mahal treatment. I mean, they are three-man band buddies.
Hard body.
Yeah, he's like one giant vein running around. I'm like, what is that about? And that happened in like over 3 weeks.
Well, I think these guys like do a really good job when they're out on the indies of keeping themselves in shape. And then they go to WWE and now they have the best nutritionist, best doctors, best this, that, and the other thing like in the world. And they just said that it's not entirely possible that these guys are doing this without the use of steroids. Like it's you know, not entirely impossible, rather.
But unlike
Bella, were you the one that called him "Don't assume my gender, Mahal"?
Yes, that's did you just assume my gender, Mahal? Is what I call him.
That's fucking hilarious.
That's.
I'm waiting for the transsexual character. Like WWE needs to be more on the pulse with shit that's going on in the world, and while. Generally politically incorrect, and I understand that I'm not a fortune, you know, I'm not like a New York Stock Exchange publicly traded company. That's something that I think they could do more of, and the New Day have tapped into that, but obviously not on quite such serious topics as things like that. But yeah, did you just assume my gender, Mahal? Is the only reason he's at all entertaining to me is that I get the giggle to myself when he comes out.
Real quick, guys, do you think McIntyre being there, I mean, clearly they're using it because they're using his WWE name. Do you think that's a result of Nakamura going up, or, you know, possibly, you know, Rude going up? So, you know, he just retained the title rather. But they still could pluck him at some point. Do you think that's a result of the upper crust talent leaving?
I think they always tend to tease somebody at these events, and they always seem to like tease them, and then by the next takeover they're debuting. So it's like whether or not he shows up tomorrow at the NXT tapings, or if he is, you know, just kind of out of nowhere debuting at the next takeover, they always seem to have somebody. I mean, this goes all the way back to like Asuka at almost the first Brooklyn takeover. I think they teased her being there. Rude at Dallas at it just seems to be something that they like to do, and it gets a pop. And luckily for those two guys that were sitting behind them, they were on TV all night as a result of it.
Did they do that in the United Kingdom tournament yet? Do they have the show yet? The United Kingdom show or whatever?
Like a month ago?
Because that's where I see Drew McIntyre going.
That would be cool. They don't.
No, I was saying, you think so? They don't. They've got maybe two big boys over there, and he's oddly. So I don't think he's 7 foot. I do think he's like 6'7", 6'8". But most of those guys are 5'11" and down. And you had what Wolfgang and the other guy who I like, who got knocked out of the first round. But those guys are like 6'2". He's towering over 90% of those guys. Is that visual too jarring for him to go there? And do they need him there?
I think it could really legitimize the title if you have him come in, annihilate Tyler Bate, run through all the baby faces for a little while, and then you have like Mark Andrews go over him, and then ultimately, you know, you can build like almost 6 months of storyline out of that, plus Pete Dunne fucking over Andrews on the other end of that. That's almost a year of booking if you do it right. But I think that's something that I would be interested in seeing. Like I said, if he comes in, carries that title for a while, and like really legitimizes it as not only is he somebody of note, but somebody of stature, that title will mean a lot more when one of these smaller baby faces takes it from him.
Yeah, I feel like he's needed more on the UK show than in NXT.
It could almost be his NXT. Like, he can do that run instead of doing an NXT run for a couple months, and then when he's done there, he comes up on the main roster and fits in wherever they want to throw him. And buddies is something I could see kind of working, but I don't know where he'd fit in as a single star, really.
I think they tried that.
They may have.
They were, like, the only two sole survivors on the Survivor team. I think along with the Miz, maybe. So, yeah, this was back when Shane was, I think, 2011, when they were all just getting started, and there was supposed to be this new change of the guard. But McIntyre was McIntyring it, so...
Well, fair enough. All right. Well, I did mention Aleister Black a little bit ago, and he had a match. He debuted. His entrance was interesting. It was sort of Finn Balor from Wrestle Kingdom 8 meets, Baron Corbin in some weird sort of way. His gear looks very much like Baron Corbin. I could see somebody not just watching him for the first time, just looking at his gear and being like, why is this guy dressed just like Baron Corbin? But minus the
tattoos, don't help either.
No, it's like, I mean, he could be his brother, and I'm afraid that they might go that route someday. But this was a kick-ass match. Both of these guys look really good. Coop, I believe I know you to be a fan of Black. Is that correct?
This is literally my third time seeing him.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm thinking someone else.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Once online, the once in a European tournament, and the and tonight. And to me, he didn't disappoint. I love that package with him in the church and the suit, and like give me some dark, some dark business. I dug it quite a bit, even down to the way he actually physically entered the ring, with the roll into the Indian style seat. I'm really interested to see what he does in NXT, and if that, and again, back to if that aesthetic is something that they keep with him, and where do they go with the character, because he's like the quiet man almost. And I kind of dug the dichotomy in their looks, where Amos is, he's all in white, but he's the villain, you know, he's the heel here, and Black's got the tattoos and the crazy hair and the beard and everything all in black, and he's the face, you know, even with the dark intro and everything.
Yeah.
Strikes were ridiculous. The kicking was just insane. And as much as like you'll hear me talk about these guys, we got to appreciate these guys more for really sacrificing their bodies for us. But as a viewer, it's like, Jesus Christ, they are laying it in. I loved everything about character work. Everything about this match was great. And it was like, for me, the whole, okay, no build to any of this stuff. Not really, you know, and it was another just example of NXT just being able to pair guys up really well and, you know, and put on great matches.
Yeah, no, I agree there. Man, like both of this was an interesting choice from the aspect of Almas is really a true heel, but Black is really not the traditional face. I thought it was an interesting contrast to go with. But D-Will, what are your thoughts on both of these characters? I've been a big fan of Almas, and obviously we're seeing Black really for the first time here tonight.
I already don't like Almas. What's his name? His name is too damn long, and they need to just shorten it to CN.
Agreed.
Just call him CN, and that's perfect. All right, I can do it. He's 100. Okay, that's cool. That's cool with me. But Almas, Andres, Gonzalez, Rodriguez, Hernandez. No, he's just fucking CN, and let's move on. And I don't like CN. He's such a poor man's Alberto Del Rio. I just He's not over with me. And what was the other guy's name on?
Aleister Black.
What's his name?
Aleister Black.
Aleister Black. Okay, my first impression of him, I don't like him. Justin Barr said this a long time ago, and I agree with him. If you are going to have a long, drawn-out intro and entrance, and it takes forever for the bass to just drop and you just walk to the ring, you better for damn well be worth it, and he was not. His interest lasted way too goddamn long. Just walk to the motherfucking ring and get started. That said, the strikes and kicks, that's cool, but I don't want to see this big, tatted up man doing moonsaults and flips and tricks and shit. Just fucking fight. No more moonsaults, no more hippity hoppity and bouncing off the ropes and shit. Just fucking fight. Just fucking, if he just struck it, did elbows and kicks and shit, I'm cool. No more flips. He's too big. That's like he look and he just looks like Baron Corbin. So imagine Baron Corbin doing all those flips and shit. No, it's just unattractive and it don't look right. And it's not what I want to see in a wrestler that looks like that. Not him. So I'm already on the fucking black fucking railroad that's been fucking
the blacklist.
Yeah, he's been fucking blacklisted. So fuck him.
D, well, this is why I love you, man, because I respect the hell out of your opinions about things, but I couldn't disagree with you more. Like, I love this whole, like, sort of apocalyptic Assassin's Creed thing he's got going on here. Like, there's something kind of really cool to me about love the quiet man, as you said, Gerald, like, just the solemn, almost like, you know, warrior monk to a degree. Like, there's something really kind of really cool about all this, and I think that a cult thing, a little too much nowadays. Obviously, you got, like, Wyatt. You've got Ember Moon, who's sort of got that mystical thing going on. You've got Sanity. You've got the Authors of Pain are sort of like this post-apocalyptic. Like, that. Do they not know how to book any other sort of, like, other than, like, a chicken shit heel or an evil, you know, henchman?
Don't get me started on heels. Please don't get me started on heels, man. I don't mind it. And try not to go too far away. I feel like the Bray Wyatt needs to get away from the magic stuff. And I go on a rant on one of my podcasts. It's not even a WWE podcast, but I go on a rant about that. I don't know, man. Like that warrior monk analogy is. I think that's more appropriate than post-apocalyptic. It's just dark. It's like, why is his package from a like any part of his package from a church, you know, like are they ever going to expound on that? That's where I am. I mean, it's again, these are great, my personal taste. I like darker stuff anyway. These are tremendous visuals and like linearly they tell a story, visually they tell a story, but are you going to get into who this guy is as it relates to those visuals? So, like, that doesn't feel post-apocalyptic to me. It hasn't been explained yet, so it's kind of hard to, you know, just make the judgment.
Yeah, I guess cool I think it's more going off the gear as far as the post-apocalyptic comment. It just looks like something that you'd imagine, like almost like a Mad Max kind of thing to a degree, right. It bordering on steampunk even in some weird sort of way, all mixed in with derelicts from Zoolander. I don't know. It's a very, very odd combination. But, yeah, that match was good, and obviously it looks like we're well, at least two of us are looking forward to Aleister Black's future here in NXT, and we have two title matches to talk about.
Aleister, it's like someone was fucking playing W2K with him as he was in the ring doing all those fucking flips and tricks with this big ass man. Somebody took the Undertaker and put the Rey Mysterio fucking moveset on him. It just didn't look right, you know, so yeah. He's a no-go for me.
It's funny you should mention the name, and before we move on here, is that Vince has a tradition of not only getting rid of first names, but specifically getting rid of first names that start with an A. Adrian Neville, Alexander Rusev, Antonio Cesaro. They're all gone. This can't be a coincidence. Gerald, is he just going to be black when he comes black to the main roster?
That would be dope. Actually, he's just black.
Has done it because there's too many names. There's too many generic names. Like, look at everybody that competed today. whatever black, fucking Andreas Rodriguez Hernandez, fucking everybody in the tag team match, the main event. They're just regular names. Just, I think we need more character. Asuka, perfect. Kenta, Hideo Itami, that he should have just come back, came as Kenta, you know. So there's more gimmicks, less real names. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, I enjoyed the name. I thought Tommy N was a cool name the first time I heard it. And I think Aleister Black is actually also a very cool name. You can't call him Black. They can't. They could. No offense, they could. But no, I agree with you, Misery, that CN Almas is just, that's just, he's got like six names. That's just, it's just a mouthful. It's too much. But Aleister Black, I'm in. Like I'm like top to bottom, flippy shit and all. I'm in. I want to see where this guy goes. I got high hopes for him.
All right, so we got two out of three of us excited, like I said, for Black moving forward. But let's get into this next match. And I don't know about you guys, but this for me, this was the match I was looking most forward to this whole weekend. The triple threat match, which frankly I didn't even realize was an elimination match until I guess right before the match, which I don't know if I sneezed or if I didn't, you know, I missed something, but and they got a plenty of time and they told a great story. This was an absolutely phenomenal match, lived up every bit of the hype that I had set for ahead, if nothing else. D Will, what'd you think about this one?
I can't really complain about the match. It's just, and I'm going to nitpick, this is not really a big deal, but I feel like the Revival should have won, and I feel like they should have turned face tonight. They had the face team like get eliminated first, and now you got two heel teams going against each other. Like, who's the crowd supposed to cheer for? Everybody hates Authors of Pain, and I mean, they can kind of respect the Revival, so they're going to cheer them by default, but, you know, I think having DIY get eliminated first was a mistake if you're not going to have the Revival win and try to look like the conquering heroes. So, otherwise, great match. Was very entertained. What about you, Gerald?
Loved it. Loved it. Fantastic psychology. The big spots were the Gargano spot where he doesn't know who to hit when was it Dawson who has a one of the Authors of Pain in the leg lock, however it went down, where he's deciding who to attack at that point. I love the way they work together against a larger team, against the bigger force and the more dominant force. To your point about the two heels finishing, two heel teams rather finishing the match, I think that lends to the era of competition again, that it isn't, you know, you're going to have your heel face dynamic and heel face synergy, but that this is still a competitive environment and not always pro wrestling all the time. So, and I don't know how much true faces in a sense of crowd reaction, Revival are. I think people love the Revival, and in the absence of, a face team, they're your, I wouldn't say default face either. I think people really do like them. And I don't think that many people, well, I mean, the reaction said it, that many of the crowd there wanted the Authors of Pain to win. So I didn't have a problem with that. I'm, you know, again, I'm all for raising a level of realism so that I can be more engaged and the more real it feels. And the good guys get knocked off first, and they are the smallest team, and they were getting fucked up pretty bad. Those guys getting knocked off first made all the sense in the world to me in a realistic space. So I didn't have a problem with that at all.
I can't disagree with any of that.
Yeah, with all that pretty much as well. I mean, there were, like you said, some spots. The spot where the Authors of Pain chucked Gargano into a suicide diving Ciampa and then turned around and threw him right into the Revival, like a sack of potatoes. That was such a great spot, and they did have like the superplex to the outside, and obviously
that
the super glider in and of itself.
The year. That superplex off the top to the floor, spot of the year. That is
frightening.
You have to trust everybody so much to pull that off, right? Oh my gosh, I was scared, but it paid off. I hope they do it again. So Somebody do it again, please. I want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, that really was a creative, you know, spot you don't see a whole lot of, and you probably won't, and that's probably a good thing. But these guys all pulled it off really well, and like I said, the Super Collider is a pretty cool move, and that's, you know, that obviously is what ended the match here. I think we did get almost a little bit of a tease of a babyface turn for the Revival. I think a lot of us have expected them to be the ones to get called up at some point in the near future. They've kind of done everything there is to do in NXT, but maybe they do sit around for a little bit and act as baby faces going up against Authors of Pain, is now DIY lost the titles and lost their rematch. But another one of those situations, who, if anyone's coming up here, and I'll also throw in there, are the Authors of Pain as good as they've come off, or is it because they're working with two of the best tag teams in the world?
Can I jump in rather? Don't you think SmackDown needs these guys as heels, no less, the Revival?
I mean, it's tough to say. Tough to say.
They need all of them. Just replace everybody that's on SmackDown. Get rid of the Villains, the Ascension, and Breeze Dango, and just put these three teams in, and then there you go. Problem solved.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, obviously, the Authors of Pain are going to stick around for a little while to figure out something with these titles. But I mean, DIY and the Revival are ready. The Revival are the best tag team in the world, in my opinion. Like, they're beyond ready. Make an impact. Hopefully they get up there and they make something. They basically, I'm hoping that they've been holding out on their call up because they got something huge planned for them. But I'm sorry, Gerald, you had something else.
No, I was just saying that SmackDown tag roster is anemic at best, and I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know if that's just the way they're using their tag teams or what, but you know, I think weren't Alpha off of TV for close to a month and they were the champions. You know, they went so far away from the feud with the Usos, we forgot that they had a feud. And it's like, okay, well, we're back at this thing, and well, this kind of feels familiar and it kind of doesn't. And you know, there didn't seem to be any heat between the two teams, but when they were, you know, the Usos were attacking their knees and putting guys out, that was like one of the best things on the show. And now it just seems like there are two teams up there, and they need an injection of something to get them going. And the Revival seem like they would just light that all the way up. It really feels like those two guys could literally do great things with anybody in any situation. And I think if they're coming up, SmackDown's got to have them.
D Will?
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you had anything to add.
Well, I just want to say this thing. I love Paul Ellering. I think, I don't know if he's a good talker or not because I haven't heard him speak, but his presence alone enhances the Authors of Pain stock, in my opinion. I think he's just the perfect fit visual-wise for these guys. Those are my ending comments.
Yeah, I like Ellering as well. I think he's good with them. I think they're almost ready to move past him. Like, I think he's not really contributing a whole lot. I obviously, it sounds like you know you don't have a whole lot of, you haven't been following them quite long, but that he's been with them since the beginning, and he cuts a good promo, and he does all the talking for them, which is good because it doesn't even sound like either one of them know how to speak English, at least in kayfabe. And but now they're at the point to where they're out there just murdering dudes, and it pretty much speaks for itself. So I'd like to see them move away from him. I was really hoping that we'd see Jim Cornette come out with the Revival tonight, though. Coop, did you think that was a possibility?
That would have, no, I didn't. But it would have been cool as shit if it did. He's the perfect 80s manager, and they're a throwback to that era. That would have been beautiful, and I think the place would have lost its mind if he did.
Oh, absolutely. There might have been like, the crowd might have taken it too far. Like, we might have gotten like Young Bucks chance or some shit just to piss him off.
We got the lead chance. So,
you know,
we got the lead chance because they were pissed because DIY got a little. They were chanting bullshit too, I think.
They were chanting bullshit, and they were chanting delete. And almost to D Will's point, with the baby faces going out first in this match, it would have been a perfect time for the Hardys to just magically show up and you know, beat up the two heel tag teams that happen to be left standing. I think maybe in addition to the crowd being angry, they were kind of putting two and two together a little bit live, and obviously adrenaline running high. They were hoping for the best, But yeah, you know, the Lee chants, man, I cannot wait to hear those, hopefully tomorrow night, and if not Monday. But I'm pretty sure that we'll be hearing them soon on WWE TV. And unless anybody else has anything to add on this one, let's go into the main event here.
Well, you're going to hear the Lee chants regardless of whether they debut or not.
That's true.
The crowds like to troll.
That's true.
Yeah, you're probably right. And 70, 80,000 people chant the lead will be pretty cool, whether or not the Hardys are there. No one will appreciate that more than Matt Hardy, I'm sure. But so the main event, Nakamura 2. Rude Nakamura 1 is still my favorite match of the year. I catch some shit for that on occasion. But we got a heavenly entrance for Bobby Roode. We got a new belt, which also we didn't touch on the women's belt, but it's really not all that different from the new men's belt. They more or less are cut from the same cloth. Very interesting new shiny belts. And before I go into my thoughts on this match, I'll go to you first, Coop. What did you think?
First, the entrances. I was blown away by the entrances, and whoever, whatever creative team puts these, you know, main event entrances together, like, kudos, because these were great. Even a more toned down Nakamura entrance with the silhouette, the sheet falling and everything. They just do. I want them to do more of that on these main shows with these with the pay-per-views. It's just such, like, I mean, I know they spent a lot of money on it, but it's the video wall and it's the video floor and it's the Titantron, and it doesn't do anything for me once you see it, you know, twice a week and then, you know, twice a month on pay-per-views. But somebody put so much thought and so much effort, and they weren't, they, you know, it's wrestling, so they're over the top, but they, in comparison, they're so subtle and so creative. The entrances were fantastic. I had a little bit of, I felt the match was really slow at the beginning, but once they hit their stride, again, great psychology, tremendous drama, and a clean victory for Rude, which I did not see coming. I figured Nakamura would win, but I didn't see a straight up victory for Rude, and that shoots his stock up quite a bit. It's kind of, you know, the knock on him at this point is, all right, well, this guy's an entrance, essentially. Or as we were talking about on Twitter, that he's Triple H Lite. I think this knocks him up a couple of levels to be able to beat Nakamura straight up. But I enjoyed it thoroughly, and that's the thing I think a lot of, sorry for the run on guys, but a lot of the other matches lack is they don't take the time to build drama. Like, it's, you know, lock up high spot, go home. And this just was a beautiful slow build to a finish. And you bought on all of the false finishes, you know, you were invested all the way up to the end. And that's the stuff I dig.
Absolutely. D Will.
Yeah, I agree 100%. People just need to, everybody on the roster needs to just take some time and watch this match and really digest it and really try to understand what psychology is and what it really means to a match and how much it can increase the
it'll make us care. It'll make us care.
Yeah,
it'll
exactly. Care. Like, the way Nakamura was selling his knee the whole time, I mean, man, and I thought after the first Impaler DDT, he was out and he kicked out. I'm like, oh man, he's probably gonna win this matchup then. And then he winds up losing, which I think is a good thing. I think Rude should remain champion. But yeah, everybody just needs to take the time and just learn from these guys, you know. Cooper mentioned something about the silhouette or sheet, whatever it was, that during Nakamura's entrance. I hope they do that every single time. I hope that just be a regular part of his entrance now. That's just absolutely great.
Yeah,
his shadow in the background, and then it drops. Just phenomenal, man. He's got the best. His music put him over with anything.
Oh my god, that music is so dope.
Not to mention he's charismatic. I think he's an Asian Michael Jackson. He's just got that charisma, that swagger. He's just a character, and I really hope that he does well whenever he does go to the main roster. So yeah, great match, Bobby Roode. does look just like fucking Triple H, so I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for his future. So
it's a good thing, believe me. That's a good thing, believe me.
I don't know, because people may look at Bobby Roode, and if they push him too hard, they'll be like, "Oh, this guy looks like Triple H. He's probably better than Triple H." He in ring wise, he is better than Triple H. Promo wise, about the same. But either Bobby Roode's going to flourish in the main roster, or he's going to just plummet, depending on Triple H's ego and how much he likes him. Well, what are your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, before I get into my thoughts on the match, Roode to me is just like at best upper mid card Triple H. Like, I just don't ever see him having a world title run on the main roster. I just think there's just too many similarities between him and Triple H. And frankly, there's, you know, he's thus far in WWE, he's been a theme song. He's been a couple of really, really good matches. Don't get me wrong, but his character is really very one note to me. And I'm hoping that maybe they can expand on that a little bit more. But the match itself, one thing I will give Roode lots of credit for is that he does so much sick moveset. Like, he is traditional professional wrestler from beginning to end. His moveset is Irish whip, chop, neck breaker. Like, he's like a modern day North American Antonio Inoki. And that, like, he just treats it like an art form. Like, it's a fighting style for him. And then we obviously know Nakamura's got the strong style, more MMA based. And it's, this really just is to me, in addition to a battle of characters, a battle of styles. And Roode's more conniving, just more vicious at the end of the day attitude ended up giving him the win here. I love the super glorious tornado DDT. And then to come full circle with all this, Bobby Roode being Triple H light is basically because they're light. And Bobby Roode steals a line from Ric Flair as he's leaving for the night yelling, "Learn to love it." And I thought that was such a great quote. I thought it was a great touch. He's very much just, you know, it's almost like Flair, Roode and Triple H are two guys that want to be Ric Flair. And it's just their interpretations of how it turned out.
Not a bad
I did get a hint from. Of Flair in his... in his entrance, and for a second I thought he was going to do the strut. Honestly, it looked like he was getting ready to do the
Ric Flair strut.
He's done it before. Well, I'm open yeah. Shit. I'm surprised he didn't do it this time. But yeah, I see the Flair and I see the Triple H and Roode. So yeah,
I what you were saying, Bello, I think I don't, and this is a compliment. I don't think that these two guys have a natural chemistry. When you were talking about their styles, I think their styles would, if these guys were less professionals, I think their styles would clash. I think that they would have bad matches. They don't seem to have like a natural synergy, but again, to add, to kind of stack up on your point, I believe that they're so good at their craft that they made that work. They made that difference of styles come together. And it was primarily like we were talking about before with the psychology, building a match as opposed to going from spot to spot.
Yeah, I would say it's almost like if you were shooting an action scene in a big blockbuster movie and you wanted to have a really good fight scene, there might be two particular forms of martial arts you wouldn't want to pair together to get like a really interesting fight scene. And maybe these two guys represent those two particular clashing styles. But like you said, man, they pulled it off in spades. It's hard to imagine, like, whoever's the next, obviously Nakamura's got big shoes to fill as it is, but whoever's going up against, like, they got a tough act to follow. These have been spectacular matches. This one's making the charts again for me. I'm going to end up putting this on my match of the year tracker. I love this match. Same thing with the tag match. We got three excellent title matches, but I don't think I got either of your comments on the new belts. I guess overall, and the tag titles looked really small to me, and the men's and women's titles look very similar. How did you guys feel about the new change of belts overall? And why do you think they might have done this?
You know, you ever seen a forensic show, and they turn the lights out, and they have that blue light that examines all the special content on the items? That's exactly what they did to all these belts, and then they realized that they had a problem, so they that's needed to shit. Change the belts. So that's exactly what the fuck they did, and that's why the change.
Oh man,
I didn't really I didn't pay too much attention to the new belt. I like the bling bling. I like the shiny stuff when Cena came out with the spinner. But I'm like, oh, that's the dopest thing I've ever seen. So the
belt. How long did that last?
It lasted what?
Did you like it the whole way through?
Yeah. I was sad when they made it stop spinning. When Triple H held it, bastard. But up until then it was spinning. I was like, yeah, I need me like six of those. Need me a watch, need me a belt. The necklace with it spinning all over the place. So yeah, new belts, cool, I guess. Completely necessary. So Gerald, how'd you feel about them?
I dug them. I think we did touch upon it, but and my thought wasn't just the Page stuff, Blue Light Special. To me, it felt like this was their. I don't even know how to explain it. If anybody reads comics, like every couple of years, they would have a crisis in DC, and they would kill a bunch of characters. They'd clean up some story, and they'd start the entire company in a new direction. And NXT, like I said earlier, they do that every now and then. And I think this was, could have been the other thing, but I also think this was symbolic of a new direction. I like the belts. I like the uniformity between the men's title and the women's title. It's not as much for me with the WWE belts. Like that corporate logo is extremely irritating. It's extremely irritating. It's just so big and in like your face. But these, no, you know what? When The Rock had it, I think it was, he was the first one to have it because he won the belt from Punk, and then they put that new belt on him. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so.
And then, and you know, when we got the brand split, then everybody had all of the singles titles, the male and female singles titles were these, you know, and maybe it's me because it's like, okay, here's another freaking corporate logo in my face every 5 seconds. Initially I loved it, but again, they compounded and added in everything else. But here it feels it, though, those belts have, a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new, which I definitely appreciate, the older design, the oval ornate on the outside, and then you have their logo in the middle, which I like, and again, if it just freshens things up.
Yeah, I thought, unless I didn't see it, it looks like the men's and the women's title, they just say NXT title, and we're going to, just by virtue of the fact of the particular gender of the person who's carrying it, now know whose title it is, I guess, because I didn't notice it saying women's title or heavyweight title or whatever the case may be, and they do look really similar. I don't know if the authors of Pain just made the tag titles look really small, but they came off a little small looking to me otherwise, overall. And it's totally possible, but otherwise, I mean, yeah, I like the new titles. I like the sign of the new era, Gerald. I like that. I'm, you know, hopefully that's not you just being optimistic, and that we are kind of moving into a new, you know, a new era of NXT. Nakamura and Asuka, you know, staples probably move in their very near future. Almost like to a degree, like with the women's division. I think Nikki Bella is probably on her way out, and they got a new influx of obviously Asuka's and Ember Moon's and kind of all that kind of stuff working their way up to be the second generation of this women's revolution. I think that's really when this whole thing kicks into high gear, and it'll be a new era for them as well, and cruiserweight wrestling and British wrestling. And there's clearly a new, idea going on with them that they want to niche and hit it and try to make as much money off of it as they can. And I hope that they bite the bullet and start going back to like hardcore wrestling. Give me an ECW show done right on the network. Put all the R-rated or NC-17 ratings and all the warnings you got on it. But yeah, I think that would be something that people would watch. And if they could get it on the network with all this other stuff, maybe you pull them into some of the less ridiculous over the top. Will, what do you think about them kind of WWE that is touching in what is basically every little genre of wrestling they possibly can, and which ones do you look forward to the most?
I mean, at what point does it become too much? Like, I feel like they're doing too much, in my opinion. They got these the United Kingdom brand, this Cruiserweight brand. There's talks of another women's brand. They're gonna have a whole bunch of different international brands. I just enough's enough. I mean, I like wrestling, but goddamn, you know. So, I mean, I'm not really looking forward to anything because they continue to disappoint me with everything that they fucking do. So, that being said, you said something about Nikki Bella retiring, and I think this is the perfect time for her to retire because with the women on Raw and these new women in NXT that are going to come up, they wouldn't just eat Nikki Bella alive and just reveal her as the fraud that she is.
I mean, I'm with you up until a point. So brand split happens, two pay-per-views a month, 3-hour Raw, 2-hour SmackDown, all the other wrestling that I was watching, you guys hipping me to, you know, the ability to watch other stuff. I was on like, okay, I'm on E. Like I am on E. I literally watch Raw in like 10-minute doses over 2 weeks. I'm so behind on Raw, it's ridiculous. And I only get it in full time when my son wants to watch it. So I hit a point of wrestling fatigue and had to pick and choose what I liked. Now I think from the business side, they have a network and that network needs content. I think that's why they were looking in a Ring of Honor. I mean, it was obvious. That's why they were looking in a Ring of Honor. It was reported. That's why they were looking into Ring of Honor. They are literally trying to satisfy every single wrestling taste there is. Ring of Honor, and I say it on the show, is the indie on TV. It is the indie on TV from look to style, to, you know, Jesus Christ, everybody getting dropped on their head, no selling anything. But they want everybody. They want everybody. It's okay. So we're going to give you every style of wrestling on different shows. Essentially, I mean, it's one platform, but everything's going to be carved up nice and neat for you. They're going to start. I promise you, they're going to start putting their movies on there. I promise you that we're going to get more variety show type things. That Edge and Christian thing is coming back in another form. Promise that, which I still haven't seen. What's it called? Where they do a parody of the old style.
Southpaw. Yes. Southpaw Regional.
There's going to be more of that, and they want to have their network jam packed like every other network. When this is over, that's over. When this is over, that's over. And we want everybody's library. So when you're not watching our first run stuff, you can go into the library and see X, Y, and Z. So and again, I think it's changing. Like I've been a lot higher on Raw's hit or miss. SmackDown's much more consistent to me anyway. So I feel like there's stuff I can skip. They don't want us to skip anything. They want us 24/7. If you don't like this, we got this. It's not the ultimate thrill ride branding. It's the ultimate buffet. If you want it, you don't have to go anywhere else but here to get it.
I thought we lost you. That's right. Go ahead.
No, I'm still in. Did you get it all? Because if you didn't, I'm not repeating.
No, all right. I think we
yeah, I heard it all.
I think we just cut off at the end. That's all right.
I heard everything. I'm with you on that. I just feel like the people who watch Ring of Honor and not in the Indies and the New Japan Pro Wrestlings, I think they're already there on the network. So incorporating that isn't going to bring in opinion, not necessarily. But I do agree that they should be bringing in their movies, and I think they should have more entertainment shows to their World Wrestling Entertainment Network brand. So there was this rumor about Dolph Ziggler having a dating show, aka The Bachelor or Flavor of Love, if you're familiar with those concepts. I think that would be great. I'd watch that all day long. I would binge watch that. That would be terrific. Bill, are you familiar with Flavor of Love or The Bachelor?
Me?
No.
Oh, I was about to say, sorry.
Bro, I loved Flavor. I love New York. David Otunga's first appearance in the mainstream. And shows. I'd be interested in something like that. I'd also like on the network, like, you're a network, right? So why isn't there Kathy Kelly standing on the red carpet of the Oscars with the WWE microphone in her hand interviewing people? Like, I wouldn't mind seeing, like, WWE like that. Have them go to the Super Bowl. Have them go to the Olympics. Like, why not? Like, have random stars and, like I said, Kathy Kelly or Renee Young do massive coverage of big events outside of the company. WWE spin on it. And that would be something I'd be interested in watching. I could watch the network all day if they're covering everything else. Cover politics, cover whatever. You know, I'll sit around and watch permanently. I'll cancel my cable subscription.
Yeah, if I could have JBL do politics, have The Miz actually have Miz TV, make him the Wendy Williams of the WWE Network. Fucking, they could do a whole lot of shit that they're just not doing because they're stupid.
Well, any other, and just I missed your point about the hardcore stuff. I think we've entered an era of corporate wrestling that even with the network, because it's theirs, it's not USA. USA doesn't have any say over it. They certainly could do some hardcore stuff, but I think that they serve their network masters right now, and if I guess USA was displeased if somebody from USA said, hey, why are you guys doing this? And, you know, we're trying to provide wholesome stuff. And you would have the argument that, well, maybe this stuff doesn't connect or whatever, but they may have a conflict with what makes them money on the other side. They could do it. They could do whatever they want. It's theirs. But I don't know if their network masters would approve or if that would be an issue at some point.
True.
So their sponsors and shit would throw a bitch fit. Like, oh, there's too much buzz, too much violence. Another woman went through a table this week. What are you doing? We're going to cancel ours. Whatever the fuck. We're going to stop giving you money. Fuck them. Making wrestling shitty again.
Yeah, I mean, I agree to a point. You know, the one thing that they've always leaned on is the Mattel contract. Like, oh, they make our action figures. Like, I'm sorry. Couldn't you make your own action figures? You're a billion-dollar, like, you know, corporation. You could find some other third party to make your action figures. Or, you know, even if it is something like the network, there's other networks. Like, Raw is the longest-running episodic television show in history. It's not been on the USA Network out of sympathy. It's on there because it makes a lot of money, and Comcast is smart. And some other network would pick it up if they absolutely had to pack, you know, pick up and go another route. But boys, we've had a long show. It's late. I got to get going. Let's get ratings. Let's get plugs. So we'll do ratings first. Coop, takeover. Rating for tonight's takeover.
Can I just say that I'd love to see Raw on the AMC network? AMC will let fucking anything fly.
Yes, they will. Maybe we get Don Draper on Don Draper on Raw.
There you go.
Number. Sorry. I gotta go with a solid 9. When we were in a group chat and it's like it's 10:01 or whatever it was, you know, it's like they're just getting to this match and it's like I can't believe it's over. I really cannot. This show flowed so nicely. I was entertained the entire time. Nothing ever lagged for me. Match of the night, the three-way tag match. Again, I dug the Aleister Black CN Almas match quite a bit. Like that's what I like as far as modern wrestling. That's what I dig. So I couldn't give it anything lower than a solid 9.
Beautiful. D Will?
I'm going to give it an 8, and the only reason that's stopping me from giving it is a 10 is because Aleister just fucked up everything for me. He just ruined my mood. I had to spit out my biggest spaghetti when he fucking did that moonsault. So, 8 out of 10.
That's fair. He took literally 20% off for the 1/5 of the matches that he didn't like. But that's good math and good rating. I'll give it the 8. I could see the 8 as a good score, rather. I'm going with a 9, though, Coop. I agree very much with you. This is one of those shows that's going to screw up my wrestling watching schedule because I'm going to go back and fucking watch this tomorrow. And it's going to eat up 2.5 hours of my day and I'm going to enjoy it all. And then WrestleMania is going to be a massive disappointment as always. But that's been a lengthy one at that. And, you could find me, as you guys all know, on Twitter at WWPNBello, here on the Red Zone. And boys, you go ahead and tell them where they could find you before we head out. Coop, you first.
I am at Gerald L. Cooper. Maybe I'll change it. Maybe I won't. But I'm also hosting the Hour of Honor. It's a nice little podcast. If you like Ring of Honor, I think you'll enjoy it. I do a lot of what I did here, which is run on about stuff. But hey, I always bring it back. So check me out over there.
Do you will?
You can find me on all social media platforms at Misery Williams, MiseryWilliams. If you're a woman, send nudes. If you're a guy, send me nudes of your girlfriend. If you don't have a girlfriend, send me nudes of your mother. And if you have nudes of your mother, unfollow me.
Wow. D-Will. I'll give it, you know, Bill. I'll give
it, you know. Best promo of the night. Best promo of the night, easily.
It's hard to disagree there. But yeah, guys, check out D-Will and Coop on Twitter. And check them out here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network. Not only friends of mine, but I'm fans of theirs. They're both very good at what they do. And I like to think I'm not too bad myself. But like I said, I'm D'Andrea Bello, and this is Gerald Cooper and Misery Williams, I guess, as he's going by now. And this is the Wrestling World Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Rendus in poenientes ingratas genestas.